Dr. Hill Explains, where I invite you to join the science teaching conversation with me about...
This is a podcast while driving. I'm going to cover the making of an Einstein universal momentum pendulum. It's sort of a bit similar to a clock, but completely bizarre, and the main aim is that when kids see it, they'll say, oh, I think I might do some quantum mechanics. Now, of course, that might be fantasy, but let's have a go at doing it. Now, this is a podcast while driving, and I'm actually doing this as an information brief to a couple of my friends. I'm going to name them so they know who I'm speaking to. That's Bill, Peter up in Newcastle, Simon and John, good friends in Sydney, and Dave, who's in Melbourne. Now, I'm going to list the institutions they're involved in, or the universities and stuff like that, because it is, you know, it is a public podcast. Now, the idea of this is that I'll spend a little bit of time describing what the podcast is, because you'll probably be new to it, the mates, so to speak. And the idea is that if I can't get it done in Australia, maybe someone overseas will be able to pick the ball up. If we've dropped the ball here up in Aussie land, it'll be a great place to pick up. Now, what's this entire idea of podcasts? Podcasts while driving, isn't that a bit insulting? Well, it is indeed, but what I have to do is continuously push away at the rehab, and all you various guys out there will have heard different stories of some of the trials and tribulations I've gone through, and the general idea is that I mix cognitive exercises with other exercises such as driving and just push, 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 like training for anything. It's just go, go, go. Training is, you know, thousands of hours pushing, and you're just never good enough. You keep on pushing yourself and stuff like that. So what I've done, and the various guys will know my background, I've just applied the automation that I have in automating laboratory equipment and factories to automating podcasting, so I can produce these podcasts at high rate and get them out. And so that's sort of another string there to the cognitive level. Not only do I have to actually think of what I'm doing, think of driving, hopefully you won't hear a crash or anything like that, you'll hear the, I have to also keep in mind the software development going across. And so I've got an audience, maybe half a dozen, no, not more than half, probably a dozen people overseas which are picking up on the miracle that's there. Now, I should remind everyone of some of the miracles in the lab over the years that people have enjoyed, and sort of kept the like, where you've seen, or I think John can remember me showing an optical fibre lasing. I was hitting it on the side with the laser beam, and it itself was lazy in the erbium bandwidth, and that was something to go across. The goo grating, this is where you put an optical fibre in hot melt glue and make a tunable grating out of it. So there's this miracle in the lab that many people have experienced. Unfortunately, you guys haven't... I was just thinking, some people have seen robots doing amazing things, but a lot of the... really amazing, gripping experiments I've done over my lifetime. They are these fantastic experiments that you see and you say, aha, well, that's a transformative experiment that I've seen. Now, the guys which I'm talking to will have experienced one or two of these things and sort of know the framework that I'm working in. So your average guy or average person has not seen these experiments and have not experienced this. So let's take a step back, because I'm actually going to break this podcast up into little bits, because I've got to do a series of errands around the place, and break it up. So this is something that you might be used to in podcasts. I have to stop the podcast every once in a while as I'm going up. So that's part of the rehab aspect of it. So that's introducing new to you, but for that to bunch of people, it's the idea, the search for the golden experiment, the experiment which will change all things, and it's from your deep understanding of education and of physics, trying to mix the two together at a critical flashpoint, and the experiment that I am thinking of will actually do that. Now, the critical flashpoint experiments is something where there is absolutely nothing there, but something moves, and that really captures kids' imagination. So, for example, there is this phenomenal face on people's hands when they hold a super magnet in their hands, and they can actually feel the magnetic field around places. Now, this is an important thing I'm going to have to actually talk about. What do people actually feel with magnetic fields? There's this sort of very simple line that, the more lines going through something, the stronger the force will be, but we'll have to get into that. So there are these transformative things where there is a minimum of experimental apparatus and something happens. And that is the key to unlocking kids' interests. So this is what we want to go to. So we want to mix a number of things going on. One is this podcast while driving. We're going up to Erin, so I'm about coming up to this shopping centre that I'll finish off soon. We want to mix the awesome experiment experience with and actually tune it to the kids' experience, so make it designed in such a way. Now, I am with Advantage with you guys, my council, what I have sometimes referred to as my pit crew of people who are out there sort of throwing their hands up in horror at the bureaucracy which I'm sort of flushed through, but are still there, the good old faithful pit crew. So this one's for you. I just hope that we can get it through. Oh, good God, there's no park here. Look, I've got to focus here on not crashing into these various people and parking the car. See you later. Although this sounds as though it's immediately after, I've just had a haircut and a blood test. I know, too much information. TMI, I think that's the word for it. Or the three-letter acronym for it. But I'm getting back to it. And one of the things that I have noted before we get into this is that it's actually really rather good having a multiple people that you think you're talking to. Obviously, they're not interested, or not necessarily interested. Oops, there we go. And it's by having multiple people, you need to know that you have to explain multiple things. So getting back to it, the pit crew, which I'm talking to, I sort of know some of the magic experiments and that have occurred, some sort of magic in the lab, and the profound affirming effect that an experiment has. And some people shared with it, and some people sort of know the care with which I can, and so I'm not skiting, sort of narrow in, hone in, and actually get a pretty remarkable experiment up and running. And this one is the Einstein de Haas effect. And I'll say it technically, but then I'll finish off pretty quickly. And this is going to be actually a rather short podcast because I'll be home. It's actually a long way there and a short way back from the shops. In this effect, you do something which is called flipping the spin of an electron and using that spin flip to actually impart a little bit of a shove to a pendulum. And so you flip these electrons back and forth and your pendulum is as a miracle, stands in front of you, starts to spin. Now, it's one of those things where when you see something really simple and there is nothing there and it just goes, it's sort of like a floating ball, the Bernoulli effect, or things like those, things which defy your logic, you really ask about things. Now, this spinning electron is even frying my brain, trying to actually think and understand about it. So you can imagine what it can do for a little kid seeing. So what I'm going to do is on the next tranche here is describe what an electron is and what the spin is. This is for Bill and possibly Peter. Peter is a very practical person who's going to hopefully help me build the circuit to drive this fantastic Einstein de Haas pendulum. Now, I suppose the other people will say, well, how come I haven't heard of it? Well, I hadn't heard of it, the Einstein de Haas pendulum, but it's one of those fundamental experiments which really, you know, expose, pull out of the complexity of nature, a simple concept. Similarly like the Stern-Galact separation of a beam of silver atoms. Now, you might go to yourself and say, aren't they electrons? No, they're silver atoms, which were split into two by a non-uniform magnetic field showing their spin up, spin down. This is a similar idea, spin up, spin down. We just have to face it that it's not a corrupt, just an ill-formed foundation of our understanding, and we want to not give a sort of, I want to avoid the word corruption, but a disordered, chaotic foundation, and we don't want to give that to our kids. We want to, for the next generation, start to give them quality, unique experiments which goes across. And when I say it's chaotic, it sounds as though there's disaster, there's malice. It is, you know, when I say chaotic foundation, I don't mean that. I mean that it's been assembled without the forethought. It's not built for purpose. It's an ad hoc, basic landfill of rubbish experiments. Good experiments have been picked out of the landfill and pulled around in sort of a rather strange way, and certain things just sitting on the side, which are excellent experiments to do, to show things, but we tend to show experiments which just fit neatly in with the narrative. And so this is an extra narrative experiment. This does not fit into the narrative of what we're teaching our kids, and when it doesn't fit in, that's not a bad thing, that's a good thing. Now, coming home now, and it'll be soon, in a short while, I'll go out and do my next errand and get things done. Thanks a lot for listening. So, we're talking off again, podcast while driving. Well, to sound as though I'm spending no time between these things. So, there was, to start off with an errand to the shops, the return from the shops, and now there's be a podcast for, I don't know, if I'm lucky, quarter of an hour, but more like 20 minutes as I'm driving off to rehab. Now, the difference, as I pointed out before, is that I'm explaining to a diverse audience. So there's some things that the audience do know, that I have a knack for pulling off incredible experiments. And it takes a little bit of planning and a little bit of understanding. So this is more of an experiment which is no new science, but, you know, how can we make this experiment a magic show? Is the big thing. And so people sort of know sort of the magic of experiments, pulling them off in labs over the years. Sort of not a commercial thing. It has had a few commercial spin-offs here and there, made few people lots and lots of money, but in terms of teaching and commercialization, this is between the cracks. This is a strategic experiment that you want to see forward. Now, what I have to talk about is the electron. I know a lot of people, eyes roll, people who know, who in that group who use the electron as their tool of trade, the chemists and physicists in that group, and electrical engineers, they think, oh, well, I know the electron. But there are a few people in the group who don't really know all that much, you know, have have know about it in terms of putting in solar cells on roofs and energy control, and they're still very much with the schoolyard view of the electron. And so it needs a little bit of an upgrade, and this is the idea buried in this experiment to do the upgrade. So let's tell you what the electron's not like. Okay, it's not a little dot on the page. So you draw the nucleus, and it's not a little dot, which is either travelling in a circle or a loop. It's nothing like the iconic cultural image. So this is a problem. The atom has become a cultural icon, but that icon is got a low teaching value. It's got a great barter value, commercial communicative value. So I can communicate an atom by drawing it this way, but that's not what it looks like. So the idea, I think I want to describe it first, because this will capture, I'm thinking in particular Bill and a few, and possibly Peter in there, capture the idea. Well, of course, that's what an electron looks like. It's sort of, if I don't cover what you think it is and how it's different, when I describe the different aspect of the electron, you'll be sort of a bit hard to understand. So this is a long explanation, or it's a longer explanation. So the electron is not a dot. You can imagine atoms being really tiny, nucleuses being very tiny, and then this is a bad statement, an unhelpful statement, that the atom is full of empty space, similar to the way that our solar system is full of empty space. One can imagine it. Electrons aren't little spherical micro dots, a thousandth the size of a nucleus or anything like that. So the nucleus is the central part of an atom. So the old view that you would have, say perhaps, of a metal being an array of mysteriously spaced nuclei, positive nuclei, creating a huge void, and in that huge void the electrons rattle through like pinballs, like tiny little ping pong balls, and a ping pong ball through. That's the Drude model from 1901. And Drude himself got rid of the model within a year. He said, I don't know whether he withdrew the paper, but it was largely set aside. However, certain people like Bohr, that had profound effect, and that went in, this sort of mistaken view of the atom has had this long, painful life. So your electrons aren't yellow, they aren't tiny little spheres, and they don't have a specific point charge. And the specific thing is that we have this term, we'll come back to it a bit later, about the spin of an electron. So when people say, oh, okay, I've got an image of a tiny little sphere, a little yellow one, much smaller than a nucleus, and it's going around, but sort of the laws of physics aren't quite right there. There's sort of special laws of physics. Now, this, I'll just put it aside for the moment. This is not the first time where we have come in and said, or we explain things by saying, oh, look, the laws of physics are different at smaller scale than a bigger scale. We actually had earlier on, way back in Aristotle, 380 BC, before Christ, this is mega time ago, he espoused the ancient view. It wasn't necessarily his first view he came up. This is us picking up a common view that the heavens, there was a different type of physics. There was heavenly physics and earthly physics, and beneath the orbit of the moon, things would drop down, suffer wind resistance. Once you got above the orbit of the moon, things would travel forever. Not in straight lines, but in circles, dummo. The Mars is travelling in a circle, everything travels in a circle, and you can watch it for a while, and they'll travel for a little while, and they'll appear to go backwards in a little circle. And so there's this idea of splitting up the universe between an Earth science and a space science. Now, one of the things is we've had a unification fine. But while we weren't looking, someone's got in and actually said, look, there's an atom size. Within the atom, these amazing things happen. These electrons, they always go in circles. They never crash into the nucleus, because they could crash into the nucleus. And also, they travel in fixed circles, and they don't radiate. All the things that you know that happens on your mobile phone doesn't happen as an atom, except, oh, perhaps when it actually emits light. It's just absolutely crazy stuff, pretty much on the same ilk and grade of Aristotle. Now, people don't get angry now. You don't see people railing against Aristotle, but I bet they would have around the Enlightenment, where they're saying, Aristotle's not that right. And so, while I'm similar here, Bohr is not that right, that atom is not that right. And of course, this experiment goes right to the heart of that. This experiment is so simple, so obvious. It's one of these things where it's a little crack and we can actually cleave, flake people away from the cultural paradigm, which is the Bohr atom. So this is a hope, you know. But what I'm saying is that the electron that you imagine is not the actual electron of science. The electron that you've been taught, which is a small yellow ball, which spins in one direction, then can spin the opposite. We're going to talk about that in a little while, because even that most people don't know about. The electron is different. So we're going to have to get into the concept of spin. Because let's stop for a moment and talk about spin and angular momentum. So, angular momentum, let's talk about it. You would notice that, say, if you have a heavy flywheel on your bench grinder and you heat up your bench grinder and you don't secure it properly, it will jump upwards. The angular momentum of that flywheels have angular momentum, they kick back. If you've got a drill, you'll feel a conservation of under angular momentum. If you suddenly hit the clacker and drill goes really fast, you'll feel a pullback where you have to push across and compensate the increase of angular momentum. It's all that type of stuff. Angular momentum, the classic thing to think about, is one of these quantities which gets conserved. So the classic picture, and this is not an incorrect picture, is your ballerina who goes around, spins slowly with the arms out, legs, and then maybe the legs out, then brings the arm into their body and speeds their spin up. Now, they're conserving angular momentum, because angular momentum is this sort of property. It's the amount of mass at velocity times the radius. It's got distance. So something traveling slowly at a great distance will travel from your axis, will travel more quickly at a short distance. That multiplication of speed times mass times distance, that's angular momentum. That's, in fact, the units of angular momentum. Now, there's a lot in it, angular momentum. Angular momentum, rotation, is something which holds our universe together, remarkably. So, relativity says that how fast you're going is all relative, but there is no relativity in angular momentum. Angular momentum is this, so the universe is sort of split into two parts. There's the XYZ, and there's the rotation on the X, Y, and Z. I've got the, what is it? Someone coming behind me. God, what are you going about? I'm travelling at the speed limit, mate. What are you doing? Oh, it's a, sorry, you can hear in the city, you hear different road surfaces going through. And this is Australian Traffic Solutions, obviously wanting to get somewhere. Gee whiz, he's an aggressive driver for a truck with signs on him. Okay. Sort of getting back to the point. We've got angular momentum, and this is a sort of fundamental idea, and electrons have angular momentum, and so people say, oh, I know angular momentum. It's the ballerina spinning. It's the drill doing it. It's the lazy Susan on my Chinese dinner table, which keeps on going, and stuff like that. So it's, you know, there's so many examples of angular momentum. It's the I suppose it's that feeling of hey ho silver, although that's not the angular momentum, but the way the stunt motorcycles kick back as they hit the accelerator. There's all these things of angular momentum being conserved as we go through, go through life. And it is one of these great things which connect to the big, broader universe, because energy isn't quantized. It goes to quantum mechanics. I'm sorry, this is the idea of this experiment. It goes to quantum. Energy is quantized. Angular momentum is quantized. So ultimately, angular momentum is in quantized units. You can only get an integer number of Planck's constants of angular momentum. Go figure. I can. It's also you've got your analog speedo. So speed is in analog. Angular momentum is digital. So imagine you're traveling along, and your car can only go at 1 kilometer an hour, 2 kilometer an hour, 3 kilometers an hour, and nothing else. It goes at those quantized levels. Now, a lot of people think that's true for energy. It's not true. In fact, there's just so much really incorrect, really fundamentally incorrect things taught at schools. So energy is not quantized. Angular momentum is quantized, and the universe is really special, and this is the key to our universe. I think it's worthwhile. Why is it relevant? Well, it's far more relevant teaching about a fake universe that culture has said, yes, we want to teach our kids about it. So the electron spins, and we have an image of the electron, which is wrong, about the electron spinning, but you can imagine the electron really small spinning. It's got an angular momentum, the electron. And there's other things, aspects to it. I'm going to talk about it for a little while later. Your image of the electron is incorrect. Not your personal, your cultural immersion. As you've been immersed in the wrong sheep dip. You imagine your education as a kind of a sheep dip, which protects you from disease. Your one actually attracts the flies to it. It attracts misconceptions upon misconceptions, and it means that you wind up munching on information at the wrong end of the paddock, and you just become stupid with this education. However, the actual electron is not a little point particle. In fact, it's not a particle. It's actually, in fact, a wave, and it can take any shape, and there's different shapes of electrons, and they can do all these things that don't have hard surfaces. So one of the most important thing is that people, when I'm just checking here, making sure I don't get killed here, but look at this, there's a great gap in the traffic. The Roads and Maritime Authority goddess up in the sky in their control room is smiling on me today. I'm getting in there rather quickly. It is true that there is a massive disparity in petrol prices. Sorry, mate, for this. It's $1.18 down here and $1.49 up the mountain. It's one of those things. I can imagine price waves going through, and the wave spreads through station to station. There's some sort of algorithm. It's $1.14.9. Wow, go suck that. A good 30 cents difference in 10 kilometers. So it's some sort of deep mathematical function here. What are you doing? Oh, good on you, mate. So there's a car which was blocking me ahead, and it did a turn that I would never dare do, because I think, what if the car does not accelerate? I'm not going to do this. But people don't ask that question. And look, there's probably a mathematical equation for petrol prices. I'm sure you can model it. Oops, okay, we're going clear here. So, your model is really beautiful in terms of that it has something. It's small, and it's an object, it's got a surface, and with like an object, like a coffee cup or a coin. If you get a coin and you flick it, yeah, that will spin. So you imagine, so how is something which has got no surfaces, and it's just a wave, how can that spin? Well, look, the bottom line is it does. Spin's not quite the word that we're looking for it. There's these people out here who protest. They say, that's using just watching this bus again. Complex numbers. You're using high-level mathematics. It's got nothing to do with reality. The bottom line is that we've looked at reality, looked at the way things move, mapped reality. We are not real. We're not I suppose it has imaginary numbers. It's beyond human comprehension. This is the bottom line here, that there are aspects of the electron which are beyond human comprehension. I mean, I can describe it, the properties of it, but the fundamental way that the electron changes, you know, as you move. So an electron is like a fluffy cloud. As you move, you can imagine the clouds above. It's like a fluffy cloud. You move into it. It never finishes. Like a cloud finishes, but it never finishes. It's always, even at the edge of the universe, there's a tiny little bit of that one electron sitting in front of you. It's a big thing. But when you say big, it's how you measure it. We measure its radius at the 50% radius. Okay, so it's a diffuse thing, and we measure the electron radius. So let me get the electron radius of a hydrogen atom is the width of a hydrogen atom. And we define that radius. We're going to call it somewhere because it's got no edges. We say the edge, the width of an electron is the width in a hydrogen atom, is the width of the hydrogen atom. And that width is defined as there's as much electron inside that bubble that we've drawn as outside the bubble. How's about that? It's not, it's a bag and you put your shopping in it. Imagine that you have a, you're at an ice cream parlor and you say, how much I'd like a scoop of ice cream in my cone? And he says, all right, I will give you as much ice cream in the cone as outside the cone. So it's spilled, you know, over the side, which is sort of okay. And I suppose, imagine rice in a Chinese food container. Fill up that food container quantum mechanically. The boundary of that container, which we call that circle we draw on the page, represents the 50% or 90% thing. There's 50% of the rice inside the container and 50% of the rice spread all over the room. Can you imagine that spread out? That's what the electron's like. It has got a surface and it does have this property of spin. Now, the spin is something unlike you've ever imagined. Now, this is why this simple, you've got this complex stuff. Can I actually reach back into the heart of education and plant a seed which will flower and grow quantum mechanics? What's more is that electron doesn't spin like your coin. It may be a fluffy cloud, but perhaps you could spin the fluffy cloud. It's different from that. I'm just getting into the right lane here, mate. Or it's different from that in that its rotation symmetry is S2. That is, it has to be spun round twice till you get to the same point. Now, you can't actually, there's no actual line you can mark on an electron because it's not a solid sphere. It doesn't have, it is the fundamental unit of existence in our, you know, in fact, most of you is electron, okay? So, really, if you weigh, let's say you weigh 100, oh my God, Father, oh God, we can get through here, oops. Okay, so I should say there's a perfectly good thing, there's a pickup truck. What we call in Australia called a pickup truck. That is a truck which picks things up. This is not a truck you pick things up. When you pick up, you put it in the truck. It's a truck which picks things up like cars and puts them on its tray. Gone are the days of, you know, tow trucks. Tow trucks are well and truly gone. Okay, we're getting back here. It doesn't, I'm going to have to go through on this spin thing, because this spin thing is what we're going for. We're going in with, if you imagine a commando team with an experiment which is so easy and so amazing to do that we can knock it off. And I think I've got all the kit ready to go. I just got to buy, probably, got to get a few things going for it. But it's a spin. Now, the spin is 720 degrees. So you imagine you have this magic coffee cup. and you spin it around, you spin it around twice, where's the handle gone? Well, mate, spin it around a second time. It's what an incredible coffee cup. The handle's in front of me, I spin it through once, it disappears. Spin it through the next time, it's somewhere in a dimension. It's a multi-dimensional. The electrons are multi-dimensional. They cohabit. That's a beautiful story. They cohabit. Spin up and spin down cohabit our universe. Is that... Oh, no, I'm avoiding this one, mate. And we're going A-OK for time. Sorry, mate. I'm looking at it. So, electrons have an S2 symmetry. Now, for David, you will know good old Professor Opat. And he did one of the first groundbreaking experiments showing S2 symmetry of a neutron during neutron diffraction, because this is an important thing in neutron diffraction. And for perhaps Simon, who's out in physics, you know the gyromagnetic number is 2.002. So that's 2 from the S2 symmetry and 0.002, that last 0.1% change is due to Feynman diagrams, the virtual particles of the electron spin. Well, sorry, mate, I've got the green arrow, I'm sitting in this lane. Okay, so that's for you guys, but for really everyone else, spin is this remarkable, remarkable product that we apply to an electron, and it is not... An electron is really... obviously, electrons in our universe, you are made out of electrons. If you weigh 100 kilograms, 1/2000th of your weight is a electron. So all your bulk... so it's... One on a billionth of your bulk is stupid to say it this way. This is because people get so confused. One in a billionth is the actual nucleus. The rest, the other billionth, the other 999 million, it's electron. The electrons cause all the bulk. So to give you an idea, if you were to have a Tim Tam which is 50 grams, that would be about a 50-60 gram Tim Tam. That weight is equivalent to your weight, the electrons which contribute to your weight. It's or less than, because your neutrons there, so it's roughly 4,000. You'd be lucky. Be a Tim Tam weight of your body. A Tim Tam of your weight. Sorry, it's for people listening overseas. A Tim Tam is an Australian iconic biscuit, chocolate covered, sort of reasonably biscuit component, top and bottom, and in between sort of a creamy sort of chocolate thing, which is a bit chewy. It's probably got gum components in it. Explain it all that well. So Tim Tam, I'm going to have to stop here. Tim Tam is a classic cultural item, like an atom. Everyone in Australia, at least, not around the world, knows what a Tim Tam is. They immediately know its shape and dimensions, and I've use it to describe shapes to blind people. I say it's 10 Tim Tams across, and that they know it's got automatic structure. It's not got a golden ratio, but it's got a dimension that everyone knows. It's like this long square. It's small. Okay, it's like a fish finger of chocolate. Well, that's not quite right. Fish fingers have got its known dimension. But that being said, talked about electrons take up all the bulk of you and in space of you, and look, the basic message is that the electrons as you know it don't actually exist. what's the relevance of teaching the universe we live in? Why can't we teach our cultural universe, which is easy to teach? Well, I don't know about that. Surely you can't object to it and sabotage it. It's sort of this, like this cultural... This next degree of cultural indoctrination is that not only is cultural knowledge weird, but it also is empowered by cultural things. And so we're trying to sneak, almost commando raid in, sneak in and get the experiment X, let's call it Operation X, like the Great Escape, you know, Tom DeCarry, we're going to tunnel out of this and keep, while the goons are asleep. Look, the goons are asleep, and if everyone knows Steve McQueen and the Great Escape, the goons are asleep, and we're carrying on. We're doing a bit of gardening, just putting it together, and we're just going to put this experiment together and reconnect our youth to our universe, actually quietly lift them off their little scale electric track. You imagine, you know those, oh, we call them scale electrics, slot cars, you know, they're in the slot car race, and they're being powered by external forces. We're going to pick them up and put them back into our universe. It's called, this is really Operation Get Them, it's like an American rescue mission. We're coming in with the choppers, we're coming in here, we're doing a bit like Q, you know, Q and things where they're developing technology. We're developing a technology for an agent to go in and rescue our youth and bring them home to their quantum heartland where they really believe. Look, the future is quantum, and we're just going to pick them up and move them in the right direction. Thanks a lot for listening. I'm going to go in and do a lot of boxing, if you can believe it. That's what they want. Thanks a lot for listening. This is the fourth section as of this long podcast. And I have to apologise. It's just the way it is. And just to put you in this frame of game, or put myself in the frame of game, it's a podcast while driving. So it's a bit disrespectful for you people out there in podcast land. And it's directed basically to an audience of people who may or may not help, or at least need to know about the pick of the lot, pick of the bunch experiments that we can get going. And this is an experiment which is going to get us into the quantum world of quantum electron. And it's poses things that you don't expect. And of course, one of the things you don't expect is the quantum mechanical electron to be rearing its head so much. And I began to say a few things about the electron. Knowing my audience, I've described some of the sort of classical school physics electrons, and of course we want to do one better. Now, we're not out here to make money or to make waves. We're in doing what we should as scientists, surveying the scene of the scientific scene and pointing our way forward. We're pathfinding to way to get forward. Now, we've discussed the electron and discussed this thing called spin and angular momentum. Now, an electron has got charge. Everyone can sort of imagine that. Then it's got spin and it's got magnetic field. In fact, its bundled up magnetic field is what makes your fridge magnet work. You can get an electric field by putting the coil of wires. I'm sure you've done that at school. You've pulled about speakers, seen the coil of wires. But for a material which is magnetic, it's a different story altogether. The actual intrinsic, an electron is magnetic. The fridge magnet, the magnetic field coming out of a fridge magnet, and it's a beautiful complex design of what's it called, poles in there. It's a sort of zigzags design. It's a really interesting design, which means that the magnetic field pokes out only in one direction. The magnetic field lines poke out in one direction. So here we've got this electron, and it is what makes a magnet, a non-electromagnetic magnet. So you've got electromagnets and what we should technically call spin magnets. You know, good God, if only we could say spin or orbital angular momentum magnets. So that's an important thing to say. These two things. Now, spin, angular momentum, you've got an idea, and quantum mechanics. It's all coming together. It's a bit of a cram. And of course, what happens is that people listening to this in the field who have been teaching us hear a whole series of new concepts necessary for what they have to answer. They don't stop and say, well, blow me over. Why don't you actually tell me? Oh, let's see what we're going here. We've got a green light. Sorry, I am travelling through slightly more complex traffic at the moment, and you'll hear me doing these various comments as I'm going across. Try not to crash, of course. Okay, so we've got an electron not as you know it. It's life, sir, but not as we know it. Now, the problem is that it's not a weird electron. That's the electron that our universe is wound up with. People are actually living in a fantasy land which is actually doesn't correspond to reality. That's a fundamental problem, that what we're teaching does not correspond to reality. It does correspond to Marx and a process and a scheme and a feeling, a look and a feel of yesteryear, but it's no longer any good, and we are going to come up with an experiment which perhaps takes no more than $10 to build, but I'd put $200. I put $200 aside if you want to go from yo to wo, to go across with it. And the most expensive thing is the microscope, which you have on the side, a USB microscope, which can measure a billionth, a really small amount of angular deflection. Let's get back to an electron. Is a multi-talented thing. It can sing, it can dance, it can jump. If not quite, but it's got mass, it's got charge, it's got magnetic field. And the magnetic field, and it's got mass, it's got angular momentum. It's got actually five properties that you can talk about it, but some of those properties are linked together. Now, but angular momentum and magnetic field are linked. And the angular momentum is quantized. It can be, you can say plus half and minus half, but the important thing is the transition is a unit of angular momentum. It's one of those things where the difference of spin state between the two spin states of an electron. Now, you might go rip your head out, but this is what this experiment's going to reach in. And it's a precision experiment that we are getting up. We're not getting organisations, we're not signing to Parliament. We are going to get a key experiment in front of the kiddies, which will mean quantum mechanics will rule eventually. So that's the idea. And what I've talked about, it's a bit about your impression of an electron, just a charge, or a charge and a mass. Charge, mass, angular momentum, magnetic field. The angular momentum of an electron is only of two values in the universe, and in fact it's part of our universe that angular momentum is like this. It's a really complex but beautiful thing to believe. Now, the spin axis, that's the magnetic field axis, will align to the magnetic field or against the magnetic field no matter how weak it is. So if you can imagine no magnetic field, yes, it can spin, but the slightest hint of magnetic field from the galaxy or from, you know, we're in the galaxy, let's move out of the galaxy. Okay, well then there's magnetic field lines between the galaxies. The universe is absolutely spun. It's got a web of magnetic field lines, and wherever those magnetic field lines are, the electrons there have a choice of aligning their angular momentum with the field or against the field. If it's against the field, it can flip. So this is the entire thing. We are going to get in our little piece of ferrite rod, which I'll find out how much it costs from JCAR, we're going to flip those electrons and actually give the rod a little momentum tap. We're actually going to organize the whole universe to rock our little cradle. That's what it is. That's so phenomenal to go about. We're going to get a ferrite rod. It could be iron. I prefer ferrite because it's less mental homework to do about it. And ferrite is the stuff, there's those rods in the old transistor radios. You know, the old transistor radios which used to have the big long antenna before we got really smart. And so the radio field can flip back and forth. It's got this beautiful thing. And the ferrite has a way of concentrating the magnetic field through the coil. So what we're going to do is we're going to get that ferrite rod and we're going to get the universe to rocket as we move these electrons to flip their spin back and forth. Lost? Well, we hope you are, because look, the fundamental aspect is this is something so simple with so much hooked into it, it's got to work. Now, I'm not quite sure of the explanations, but we, as a scientific community, can actually push through this breach in the education barrier. It's an education dike. What's happened is that the sea level of science has risen, and what people have done is they've quietly constructed around the schooling system a dam. That's worked for a little while. Occasionally water clips over the top. Occasionally they give stories about what science is like above the dam. And the problem is that they've built this huge dike around it, and everyone has been turned into dark wardens, and no one's actually watching and sensing where we're going. There's a sense of if we are adrift in science and that sort of thing. So the electron, I perhaps said enough about it in terms of it's got all these properties. It's a source of magnetic fields. By arranging the magnetic fields, flipping the magnetic fields, we can give these things a little kick. And Einstein was interested in this. He was... and this is the one physical experiment early on that he did do. Now, his conception of spin and everything like that wasn't there yet. We hadn't actually discovered quantum mechanics, and his view of things just confirmed the classical theory. But looking into it, it's something good. It's good to go. So let's talk about this thing again. We've got a ferrite rod. Pen-shaped piece of ferrite with a magnetic wire wound about it, and the wire is coming down, suspending it, and then going down the bottom. So it's a little thing which is a torsion pendulum. A torsion pendulum means it rocks back and forth. You know the torsion workings in a wristwatch is that little flywheel which goes a certain distance, springs, compresses the spring, and past itself, goes backwards and then compresses it the opposite way. It rocks back and forth. It's a little torsion spring. And we're going to rock the electrons, make the electrons spin a line to the local magnetic field, ever so small, get to go up and down, and then we are going to get this little thing to rocket. And it's not going to be pushed against anything. It's actually going to push against the universe. So this is an incredible thing to look at. So don't quite understand the electron. You will have to understand it much more deeply after doing this particular piece of work. However, there is another area of science that we have to clean out. Now, I must admit, people say, I've been in classes and sort of looking at teachers teach, and they say this entire thing, a magnet, a north-south magnet, will be attracted to the North Pole. Now, and then they get the kiddies to learn the lines of force are the force of an imaginary north monopole. What I'm getting about is that the force we feel in magnets, there's sort of two forces. The actual strength of the magnetic field, it gives you the torsion on a magnet, the turning force on a magnet. So if I've got a magnet I can feel the overall strength of the magnetic field by actually trying to turn that magnet out of alignment with the magnetic field. But then, that magnet, the force, net force on that magnet, is not due to the strength of the magnetic field, it's due to the magnetic field gradient. It's a dipole, guys, which is, a dipole means the opposite properties spread about by a distance. So a dipole charge has got a positive charge and a negative charge separated. So in a grain of rice, for instance, if you charge up one end, it will stand to pick up. It will have a little dipole moment. So if you put your comb your hair and you put the comb over it, the actual, it's not the electric field that's causing it to, those little things to stand up. It's actually an induced dipole, okay? So the electrons move, the electric field creates the dipole, and then inside the dipole then measures the field gradient. Bit of science, a bit uncomfortable. You don't like the way it's described. Unfortunately, guys, that is nature. That's the real world. I don't know what you're, you know, what people are necessarily teaching. So the important point is that we're going to put a something, make it into a sympathetic magnet. It becomes a magnet. Okay, oh, come on. Oh, no, I can't do it. Okay, I've got a mission to get the cheaper petrol. Yes. Note that, so I'm just going to move off into this lane. It's a very aggressive turbocharged red car behind me. I'm doing 60 and it's going to expect me to do 80. And I was 14.5 cents a litre, Australian cents a litre. Yeah. Okay, so we've got two areas of misconception to fight about. One is the, what is the electron? Where's the electron? Is the electron a mag? Yes, it is. It's just an electron. Is a point? No, it's not. It's not a point yet. Its magnetic field is effectively coming from a point. I'll try and get that into your head. Oh, we've got another petrol station coming up. I'm going to say goodbye as I go in to fill up. Okay, off again on the fifth section. So, going into the shops and to a rehab, so that's the fourth. Fuel's broken up to five in the fifth section here. That's right, fourth, fifth, because this is in the route. It's going to be a little while here to talk about it. So, you know, stoner crows, went into this servo and up there is a insect, flying insect killer. Okay, so you may not have this in other countries, but this is these UV lights, the pretty bright UV lights, and sort of this blue neon stuff, which these fluorescence tubes, which attracts the helpless insect into position, and this poor hapless insect gets close to the field wires. It can stay with me, see where it's going, because I said, oh, this is another example. Now, the important thing is that the insect flies close to the wires. Now, normally the insect's quite small and it would just hit one wire and, you know, what's going on? The insect comes along and gets into the localized electric field. So the electric field's got, it's got interdigitated fingers of positive and negative wires at high, reasonably high voltage. So it's pretty easy to step it up. The important thing is, as it comes close, the insect polarizes, becomes an electric dipole, and it actually gets dragged along by, even though the insect is not charged, so it shouldn't feel an electric field. So how does the insect get sucked into this zapper? So I must admit, this zapper was absolutely chock-a-block full of insects. And, I don't know, well, one of the things is that they've discovered that there's these insect zappers in butchers, for instance. When the insect flies into it, it, whoa, getting across here, I'm safe here, mate. Yeah, so It flies in, the insect flies in, becomes a dipole. As a dipole, it moves in the electric field gradient. So dipoles sense the field gradient. Now, I'm sure my friend David will know all about dipoles, field gradients, magnetic fields, and all these types of things. And in his case, protons is his baby. But in a sense, a lot of the stuff I'm talking about, electrons, does also apply for protons. So protons have also got a much bigger mass, a magnetic field, and a charge. Neutrons have got all the above, less the charge. So a very interesting thing to look at. Now, the important point here is that if I have a dipole magnet in a uniform magnetic field, and I flip the sensor magnetic field, it will not monitor the field has changed. If the field's got a uniform gradient, it will not itself not change, particularly if it's ferrite and it can actually, before it gets any... So if it's at an angle, if it's an angle in that magnetic field and it's... if it's got a position for its field built up to apply a torque, yes, it will feel a torque. But if it's actually aligned with that magnetic field, you're not going to see anything happening. Unless, of course, you have this bizarre effect that Einstein picked up on, was the electrons themselves flipping over and transferring their angular momentum to, or they're all part of the summed angular momentum of your bar. And so what happens is your torsion spring pendulum, if you can imagine it, ticking back and forth. I'd like to think it ticking back and forth at really high rates, up to say 5 times a second. I'd be happy like that. Because every time it ticks, you can push it up sufficient till it hits the end of its rotation, and then flip the magnetic field and push it the other way, like rocking the baby or rock the cradle. So that's what we're aiming for. But the important thing is that changing the field is going to have no force effect on this dipole, because dipoles themselves, oh god, there's a light everywhere, sorry. So I've just had, oh. Oops. Sorry, I've just had a blood test and I haven't actually stopped bleeding there. So that's a thing to know. They say to rest the arm, of course I couldn't rest the arm in rehab. I'm not going to die because there's hardly a drop of blood or anything like that. So I hope I'm all okay. So just to tell you all about it, you have to have your blood thinned. If you've got a prosthetic part in your heart made out of carbon, you have to have blood thinners, which is one of these icky things. I was wondering why it was there. And probably now it's dried up, it will actually get a chance to clot, I suppose. Okay, so that's really gross for you. So this is the two conceptual, it's probably three conceptual barriers to get across. One is the electron. Second is the understanding of magnets and magnetic fields. And the fact, let's go, that they're poorly taught. The electron is poorly taught. Magnets and magnetic fields are poorly taught. People think magnets are attracted in magnetic fields. Well, a monopole is attracted in a magnetic field. They do feel a torque in a magnetic field, but they have got a sense of magnetic field gradient. So your magnet will basically point to the North Pole. The torque will affect it, but it won't be ripped off its pin by the strength of the field. Stretched. It will, if there's a swing in it, the north and south pole will stretch a little bit. There'll be no net force on that item. Look, there's probably a good... if I had to teach magnetic field, if I had to critique teaching magnetic fields and magnets, it's probably about three or four major misconceptions which are in the mix that we just teach kids. It's good enough for the HSC, that's all I care about, let's move along now. Nothing to see here, move along. Like the US soldiers say at various points in time about to take a squeeze out here. Now the next thing is something that I myself think is correct, but I would be educated if I'm wrong, which is typically what most experiments are. Now, the way that this experiment is done is the piece of iron, people like doing iron, not ferrite, because it's what Einstein did. Piece of iron is put in this large solenoid, which requires a large magnetic field to operate. Here we go. And I think I'm safe. It requires this large magnetic field, a big uniform magnetic field, and this thing begins to rock miraculously. Now we're going to soup this up by actually getting a microscope up to the edge of this thing and putting a little white dot, and you'll be able to see a fraction of a degree movement in this microscope. So we can automatically increase the sensitivity of this a really large amount. What they used to do is put a classic mirror on a on the wire and see the light deflection. And so this is a classic way to use a lever effect. But I think we can make this much more compact and much more usable by not setting up the lever effect, because there's less to think about. Because if you can see directly the angular movement, this is going to be absolutely ripper fantastic to do. Okay, just watching all these cars coming around here. So this is the next area. I think you can have a current coming down your wire, which is suspending your torsion spring thing, have it loop a fair number of times around your piece of ferrite, and then go off the base directly down. So you've got a little torsion pendulum suspended here. And I just really hope this entire exercise pulls off, because I've got to get to this particular shop on the way home. You must think we're buying things all the time, but we're not. It's around Christmas time. Now, ideally, people can see, the magnetic field is supplied to the outside, that's stationary. But what I'm proposing is that we modify this experiment by having your ferrite, not really worrying too much about the magnetic field, the uniformity of the magnetic field, just putting a fair number of coils around your ferrite, and feeding the current down the center. So you feed the current down the center, and what I would suggest, what I really would like is if you could etch the top of your ferrite, sort of bond it with a glue layer, then put possibly a ferrule. So this is a holder for your copper wire through it. Ideally, as a system, thread it through. So this is your copper wire, is where your current is coming into it. It goes down through the ferrule. Ideally, wouldn't it be lovely? I don't have this access here. I'd love to have a UV curing epoxy, which I can set it up perfectly under a microscope, and then just bang with the UV, set it. Even if it's a light epoxy, to set it and then set in position, then put another larger epoxy around the outside, so it's nice and beautiful epoxy. Come across there. Even some sort of screw mechanism which comes in. All these things come into mind about how to do it. So it comes in, and you don't have to make it all that complicated. So you have it go, say, 200 turns around your ferrite coil, because you're going to put. It's you're going to, ideally, you want to have the output directly from a driving transistor, which ideally is a current amplifier. A transistor will give you the output of a transistor, pretty raw, no much signal holding. I've got to really watch, sorry guys, I've got to really watch what's happening here so I can pick the turn off. Yeah, I'll be the saddest kitten in the world if I can't pick this turn off. I think it's here. I don't know, this poor little business is up here. There's all this building at the Sydney Airport coming up. So, now, the magnetic field is actually stuck on the ferrite. And there's a whole lot of reasons. Let's hope this is it. If it's not, I'll be sad. And here. And I have a feeling that I am wrong and I've just got myself into this enormous, sad traffic jam. Oh my God, Father, but there's a roundabout for me to go around and join this huge traffic queue of doom. And indeed, this has got really nothing. Oh my God, Father. Oh dear. This is nightmare. This is nightmare world. I just cannot describe how sad this is. I'm just driving down a queue of traffic. The shop's not where I want. And there's this queue of traffic for kilometres just to go into this area. And am I going to be given the pass to go here? No, there's... God. Okay, well, this is Kingswood High School. Amazing that. Time 3:30. High school, 3:30. There's not a soul. What the heck is going along? Okay. Let's go. Okay. Wash. Okay. Kingswood High School. Okay, sorry. Getting back to it. It is... am I allowed to actually mount the wires of the current actually on my object? The current, will it feel an effect due to, will there be a kickback due to the current actually flowing the wires in one direction? Is there actually a momentum kickback? This is a big question for me. If I put a current down some wires, is there a momentum kickback for it? This is absolutely beautiful idea. Therefore, the amount of kickback will be proportional to the current. That would be a fantastic thing to measure. And then you can measure another effect of the actual kickback. It would mean that you'd be able to measure the amount of torque back for your current impulse. That should not go through the zero line. This is just an incredible aspect of it. If you really want to, you can have a big current unit supplying a large magnetic field. So essentially, the strength of your magnetic field that you need depends on the magnetic reactance of your thing. So ferrite's just absolutely gorgeous. You don't need a strong magnetic field for it to change. You would need a stronger magnetic field for iron to change. Then you've got this... other thing coming around here, mate. Sorry, I'm coming around, getting over you. Such a contrast. There's this Montezuma's private school. Lots looking big solar panels, Australian flags, car park full. Kingswood High public school is completely, absolutely dead. So what on earth? Oh, yeah, it's hard to. Montgrove College is. Such a beautiful big private school, and of course, there's nothing like actually getting a pot of money and spending it with all the regulations of public schools. You get a pot of money, and it's basically spent before you get a dollar because it's so regulated and audited. Okay, so I've got in my head, would you actually just get this kickback effect with nothing in there if you actually had your wire and you actually coupled your wire strongly to your thing? So what would be the effect? So for me, this is an area that I really find it hard to think through. So we know the effect works with a magnetic field on the outside, and so people, but just by having the actual magnetic field, the actual thing bound to the surface of this, it seems something that's really a doable thing. It does sort of make sense to me, how this is done. So it's a huge traffic jam around here. The people are coming out of their private school just causing absolute mayhem. People are joining the line around here, and that's really interesting. Difference here, Kingswood's a slightly older suburb, a bit more run down, and the suburb next to me is Orchard Hills, so it's a very upper class suburb. It's really interesting to see those two things. So essentially what we want to do is get a piece of ferrite rod, put a coil of wire around it, and have a good old experiment with it. And I need to have current. Ideally, it'd be nice to get reversing current. So this is a set of transistor, basically a set of transistors on the outside. There's sort of two ways that you can do it. I sort of like the idea of having transistors are great current controllers, and we're not talking about huge current, or you can have a huge current controller. The most sort of obvious way, which I sort of rather like, is a relay. So you have a two-pole relay in which the current is going out of the current is fed from the actual toggle switches. This is the lever arm. The lever arm rested goes up and hits positive and negative. And then when the current is switched on, it pulls it down, and the current goes the opposite way. Now, I sort of like that because it's got a thing that you can hear it changing. It's got all the acoustic story. What's going on here? Why are these people? Come on. Oh, this person was trying to go around. Oh. These poor chaps, so these poor people here going out. So I think you go. Can I say it is a fantastic, breathtaking view of the Blue Mountains or Blue Hills, because we're almost up to the level, sort of halfway up the first, monocline. It's called the monocline. There's this ridge which the Blue Mountains begin with. And we're looking on it, and we can look almost over the top into the hidden valley of Glenbrook, and you can actually see where the if you know where to look, where the actual canyon works on. You can see little houses and a few little things nestled in the place. So let's get back into it. Sorry, it is a very distracting thing to drive and try and cop pass at the moment. We have this ferrite thing with copper wire going in, going around a few hundred turns, coming out the back, and it's secured in such a way by glue that it's a very light thing. We suspend it. Then we hook those wires up, let's say for the simplicity, to a relay. We have a controlled current source, so the circuitry is all separated. The current source is here, the switching is here, and the switch to control the switch is by a I don't know, some sort of, I'd love to do a 1-5, the way I would have done it before, or the, what is it, Raspberry Pi, Arduino things, is I would have just built a 555 timer circuit. I don't know whether you can buy the 555 little circuits anymore. Okay, if only I, look, this is Garden Center, it was the next one up. And it's going to be a nightmare. Okay. Let's hope for it. Okay, well, I'm going to have to stop transitions, and then when entrance 100 metres up, when it's all going, I'll have a good chat with you and explain exactly what we've got to go. Okay, 100 metres up. Yep, you are beauty. But we're almost out in the countryside. We've been going through all this built-up Sydney in roadwork. Okay, thanks a lot. I'll finish this off about what we want to do. Back recording for the sixth and final leg of this experiment. So the experiment is essentially a piece of ferrite core. You can buy them in little rods. You can buy, I think, all different styles of them. And and you wrap a piece of wire around it. You hook it up to a relay if you really want to. Current source through the relay, and you reverse the sense of the current through this little baby. And you have basically it's at a fairly low moment of inertia, so it's a rod, a long thin rod rather than a fat rod, and you have the wire such that the wire held down. You know, ideally you need the wire attached to the top of the frame, goes down, does about 100 loops of this, then goes down, and ideally what you want, good God, okay, is a weight. It goes down to a weight which then actually is fixed. It's got a large angular moment of inertia. Good God, come on, car. Sorry, just join the traffic. Oh, you have to, oh, I really hate that this red bloody Mustang. Such aggressive little cars that anyone can drive in a US car. Okay, we'll get home pretty soon. So you want it onto a weight, and that weight has got a sort of a very large moment of inertia, so its frequency of that oscillation is much less than the oscillation you're going to try and get up the top, and that the amount of weight gives you the tension. You know, it will allow you to tension the wire, and the greater the tension in the wire, I would think, I'm just trying to think across it, because the torsion is actually moving your stress vector in your cross section of wire. So you have a thin, strong copper wire. Would say that the amount of rotation this is going to do is pretty minimal. And then you just run the experiment. It's a very simple experiment to run. Why haven't I just gone up and done it? Yes, I can go up and do it. But the overall view is to kick-start a revolution. So already one people will be able to, by doing this, discussing with a few people, I'll be able to get access possibly to the Raspberry Pi controller with the timer computer on it. I've got the USB microscope, but more importantly is I've got through this access, by making it a general community stuff, I've got access to then demonstrate this to teachers informally, probably possibly via the Science Teachers Association, but they're sort of many steps held further back. This is the universities which I'm chatting to interact with teachers, and so they can say, here's your course, and by the way, here's this other thing that's going to be the future. and we can get it up and hopefully get it done overseas. So there is an advantage of talking it through, and it's taken a little while to work out exactly how you want to do it. I think the killer series of it is actually having the current go through the wire which is suspending it, and having it coil around the actual piece in question, and then and having the weight underneath which sets the tension. What an ideal sequence of things. Like, good God, I've got to try and see what the heck they're doing up here. There's just get on to the M4 to go home. There's that aspect. I think the sort of key advance is using a microscope, because that's such a USB and such, it's not, you don't have to go through many mental stops. The image you have is of the image there. There's no mental steps across. Now, when teaching, and this is probably the sole expertise that you see that I would have, when teaching, there is this art of not removing cognitive steps from the process. How do I describe? So, say if I'm mixing an acid and a base and a indicator, I will have see-through acid, see-through base, drop indicator on both, then put it into a tube, a burette, then actually get the burette to go into a central beaker. So you can see the acid and the base, and I can see it go through, even to the point of having you have your acid and you pour it into two beakers. In one beaker you put the indicator, and then lift the indicator up and pour it down a burette, and then mix it in. It means that people can actually follow the entire thing. So about having a microscope, USB microscope, looking at the side of it, you can sort of get this at very high magnification, non-contact. And you can actually see it across. So you can see very, very small vibrations coming through this, very small rocking motion for it. By having the relay, it makes a sound every time it changes current. So people don't have to mentally see, and that would be nice if you had an LED system up the top there, where the LEDs change lit up, an LED arrow to show the current going back and forth, back and forth. So you can see it, you can hear it, and then see the rocking. Because really you want to actually remove as many... Whoops, come on, mate. Whoa, can see that one coming. I really don't understand how come I can... I mean, I saw the truck, but she was... And I've still got the Mustang behind me, tracking me. I am a boring teacher. Do not follow me. So that's the overall thing, and it's, I hope, guys, that, unfortunately it is guys, because it is a dreadfully, if it's outside the, if you're dealing outside the culture by a fair distance, and you're dealing with things which may be controversial, people will find ways for it not to be interesting, and find things about how it could go wrong. People have this natural sense that, are you going to do something which is not against the spirit of the culture? Well, I can imagine all bad things happen to you. So they don't say, I'm not interested. They say, look, I'm so busy. It's such a complicated life now, and gee, I'm finding this a little bit boring, esoteric. So this is why I'm speaking to you, but as you will know I'm a seasoned experimentalist and a seasoned education, sort of adding these two things together. Now, it's an important thing to know that, not that I'm big noting myself, like a chef will have an idea of a meal he'll get, and he mightn't get it perfect for many, many attempts, but he'll start getting the ingredients and the cooking method coming together. And really, this is a similar process out here, but you've got a combination here. This is a dish that's going to spark a revolution. It's going to be the tomato sauce put on the sausage sandwich in such a way that it's going to slowly tip that 1 in 100 sausage sauce eaters around and create a small wedge which will allow the revolution through. And as you can see, it's such a simple thing. I've got so much difficulty explaining it to you because there is so many misconceptions to unpack. When you suddenly have a rod begin to rotate for no reason whatsoever, no moving parts. It's a moving parts with no moving parts to get moving, so to speak. There's no. The world's simplest circuit, the world's simplest RDM, and what's it doing? Normally, a lever requires, you are levering this part, you're levering it off against the angular momentum of the universe. And this is the amazing thing about electrons and stuff like that. So I hope this makes up a reasonable podcast and that people can follow it. I'll give it off to Bill and a few people, and I'll get hopefully some feedback with it, and hopefully you'll be able to follow it. Thanks a lot for listening.
Another story comes to a close. It's been a pleasure sharing this moment in time with you. May you discover truly amazing things, understand them, and tell others. Thanks for listening.